Welcome to episode 154 of The Climate Champions, another live episode recorded at DistribuTech International featuring Whit Fulton, CEO at Connector. And a big thank you to the folks at DistribuTech who put together a great podcast setup along with video. To check that out, head over to The Climate Champions YouTube channel. I'm Lee Krivat, host of The Climate Champions. If you or someone you know is a climate champion, please let me know at krivatenergyinnovations.com. The Climate Champions is sponsored in part by the Gridwise Alliance, uniting grid modernization experts from across the electricity industry. The Gridwise Alliance promotes grid innovation for a decarbonized economy. To learn more, visit gridwise.org. Whit founded Connector in 2011 with a clear mission: enable anyone to connect solar panels or EV chargers to their home in minutes at a fraction of the typical time and cost, with no electrical upgrade required. Welcome to The Climate Champions. I'm Lee Krivat, and I'm here with Whit Fulton, CEO at Connector. Whit, welcome to The Climate Champions.
Hey, Lee. So great to be here.
I look back to when we met each other about 4 years ago. It was at a Gridwise Alliance Grid Connect conference. And that meeting has really made a big difference for us in our business lives as well as friendship.
Yeah, absolutely. It was really wonderful, the reach out you guys had to us. It was kind of random. And then I read the LinkedIn. And I was like, hey, these guys get what we're doing. They really get it. This is amazing. So it really launched something great.
Yeah, looking forward to a great partnership from now forward. Even though it's been great going back, forward's going to be incredibly exciting. That was for Jonathan.
Okay. We're very excited, John. Very excited.
Jonathan doesn't like the word excited. What was your motivating moment with regards to being a climate champion?
I come from Western Massachusetts, and I grew up in an era, kind of hippy-dippy granola part of Massachusetts, where acid rain was a big issue. So it wasn't so much climate change itself, you know, mid-80s. You know, all I knew as a kid was that these states like Pennsylvania and Ohio were like sending smog and like horrible rain our way that was killing all the fish. And that, you know, that leaves an impression on a kid. And so somewhere along the way, that really got inside me, and it became sort of my life's mission to do something about power plants that are causing pollution. That was the driving force for me.
You have any stories from back then, things you remember?
I remember like being in elementary school and them showing us like these mock-ups of clouds and showing us like these ponds covered with algae and thinking that like, oh, I like swimming in ponds. I don't like algae all over ponds. It ended up being just a very personal moment for me that, you know, brought it home instead of just being sort of abstract, oh, acid rain is a bad thing. And it's kind of the same way with climate change, really having visceral touch points that makes it real.
You talked about it being personally important to you because of pond scum way back then. Why is it personally important to you now?
The stock answers that, you know, are meaningful to everyone. It's like, yeah, I want a better, you know, life and future and, you know, great world for my children and their children's children, that sort of stuff. But the truth of the matter is, for me, along with those things, there's really sort of two elements to it. One is I am an introvert by nature. And nature is my safe place to go. The only place I ever feel really calm and in myself is when I'm walking in the woods or, you know, out some field somewhere. For the longest time, my dream vacation was, but it still is kind of out there, being able to hang out on the Mongolian steppe with like nothing but miles and miles of grassland and mountains on either side of me with nothing but the wind in my hair. Like that's a dream vacation for me. Protecting the notion of like having those kinds of spaces to be available for human beings is very important to me. So that's sort of one visceral point for me where climate change is absolutely critical in protecting those spaces. But the other piece of it is really, I feel every generation has a moment to meet, you know, whether it's the Cold War or it's, you know, World War II. For us, I feel like climate change is the moment that our generation has to meet. It's a huge, menacing, massive problem. But it's also an interesting problem to try to tackle. There's a lot of amazing, interesting things we can do to get after it. And I think people are tackling those things. That is an exciting moment.
I kind of thought I missed the chance to tackle a big problem just because of when I was born. It was as the Cold War was fading to a large extent.
Yeah.
But oh my goodness, do we have an existential threat to tackle? And I don't even know if it stops at our generation. I think this is a 100-year fight.
Oh, yeah, for sure. We're not good at thinking long term. You know, human beings are, we're pretty good at figuring out what we want for breakfast. Like, by the time we get to dinner, it's like, I'm not really sure. 100-year life cycle thing is just, our brains are not wired for that. And so making these things immediate and immediate goals, immediate changes and things that we can do right now is also one of the big challenges we need to tackle.
It's the type of thing we need the whole world to contribute to. We need every country, every business, all people. And I don't know that we've ever tackled a problem that required everybody to get on the same page.
That is a big question. Does everyone need to be on the same page? Because if we're going to make that assumption, then it's going to be virtually impossible to tackle. I mean, I fully believe that, yes, there are little things everyone can do, but honestly, like most big challenges out there, there's an 80-20 rule. 80% of the work is going to be done by 20% of the people. And I believe, like, honestly, the United States has to be a massive leader here. We're a small share of the world's population, but we're a massive contributor, relatively speaking, to the problem. We need to be leaders on this and to carry a lot of the load ourselves.
Also, on other issues, we've always had a good lion's share of the technology, of the innovation, of the world messaging. Yeah, I think we're very important. I agree.
Yeah, we are very important, yes.
Not me. When you meet people that don't understand or don't believe in the data behind climate change, how do you try to convince them otherwise?
It's interesting. I've never actually been one of those people who's out there proselytizing that climate change is real. It's just something I've sort of inherently understood. It's like, this is a thing we need to do something about. I mean, I'll explain to my kids saying, hey, look, there's going to be greater weather impacts. There's going to be a lot of evolution in how the climate behaves effectively. And what I try to tell people is like, look, we don't know exactly what's going to happen. And that in some ways is even worse. By not knowing specifically what the pinpoint risks are in, you know, for hurricanes, for wildfires, for refugee migrations because of climate, that's even worse in some ways than knowing what's going to happen. Having those huge unquantifiable risks out there mean that we need to do something about this now. I think having people wrap their head around the fact that, like, it's going to be bad in some way, shape, or form, but we don't know exactly how bad and where, means that we need to get ahead of it even more so.
I think it was Reagan with aerosols, where he wasn't 100% convinced, but he said, look, if there's a grenade on the ground, I don't know if it's live or not, but I'm going to jump on it, or I'm going to leave the room. I'm going to do something. I'm not just going to ignore it because it could be live. And in this case, there's so much science around it that it's obvious something's happening. We have to do something.
Yeah, I think the biggest challenge is that the fact that science itself has been questioned as a, you know, a methodology for proving whether something is true or not, when that fundamentally is the whole point of science.
Everything we rely on now was delivered by science. These cell phones that everybody is addicted to and these apps, they're all scientific creations.
Yep.
So if you're going to accept them, how can you deny science just because you don't like what it's telling you? Exactly. An inconvenient truth, as Al Gore would say.
Yep.
Can you explain, now that you're an adult and you're trying to do something about climate change, what it is you and Connector are trying to do?
The company I started, called Connector, we saw a lot of really amazing, magical things happening out in the market. You know, solar is getting cheaper. You know, electric vehicles are coming. The technologies that, you know, allow these things to flourish are getting better, better, better. But the fundamental challenge of getting these things attached to houses wasn't getting better. I worked for a different company before this where we had a magic battery in a box, and that magic battery in a box was going to do demand response, and it was going to do electric vehicle integration, and it was going to do solar integration. It was going to be the everything device.
There's a lot of those magic boxes going around.
Yeah.
We're at DistribuTech, and there's a lot of magic boxes here.
Well, it's interesting. Everything that's old is new again in some ways, because this is sort of gen one of that vision. And it was before its time. This was like 15 years ago. The state of the batteries wasn't there. The cost points, the integration points between various different technologies to make these things all work magically. Like, you didn't have the Amazon Echo out there where you could do just plug-and-play integrations of that device to make your house smart. Didn't exist. But the biggest challenge we had with that product was every time we had to put it in a house, there was all this wiring we had to do. You know, you have to rip, you know, service panels out or put transfer switches in, get it down to the basement, put it on the side of the wall, what have you. And it just cost three times as much as the product cost itself just to install it. And that was killing the economics. So one day I saw, you know, a meter change out inside the house, and I was like, oh, hey, look at that. Behind that meter, there is a socket, and that socket is identical on every single house in the United States. Why can't we use that to plug stuff in? And that was the core vision for what was now Connector. So we created what we call a meter socket adapter, which is you pop the meter off and you put our adapter in place and makes the meter stick out a little bit. And you put the meter back on. We have a big plug and socket interface where you can plug solar power into your house, or you can plug EV chargers into your house, or you can plug energy storage batteries into your house at a tiny fraction of the cost and time it takes to do all of that wiring inside. That's really what we do in a nutshell. You know, Connector's job is to crush the costs of installing distributed energy resources on homes.
When I tell people what you do, and it's not difficult to explain it, you just did very quickly, everybody gets it. They don't have to be technical to understand that you're just giving a way to get into the house from another place other than the panel, and you're getting the whole house.
That's pretty much it. At the end of the day, what happens very often is when people go to get an EV or when they get solar in the house, they'll come and the electrician or installer will say, yeah, your house is a great candidate for solar. You've got amazing south-facing expanses. You've got a perfect roof for it. You're going to generate so much power. You're going to cover all of your bills. It's going to be amazing. Oh, but your service panel is too small, or it's too old, or it's really hard to get to. So we're going to charge you another $3,000 to $5,000 to change all that out. And then you have your solar. And we're like, I just want the solar power. Why do I have to do all the things in the house? And so by moving it all to the outside of the house, we're going to connect solar power anyway. We don't touch any of the wiring inside. It makes logistics easier for the solar installers. And generally speaking, if you're talking about sort of the grid impact and climate impact, we believe that maybe 1 in 3 houses that uses our product uses it in a way that they would not have gone solar if not for the existence of our product. We lower the cost by that much.
So not only saving money, but saving money to the point where it's the straw that breaks the camel's back that you've eliminated.
It becomes the deciding factor. Yeah.
That's awesome. I know people that buy EVs and they take them home thinking they're going to do level 2 charging. And then they're told by their electrician that they can't do level 2 charging and they have to just use 120.
Yep.
So that's a pretty exciting product.
So yeah, so they drive their car once a week because it takes that long to recharge it.
No, they can still use it, man. They can still use it.
We're really excited to talk about the fact that for the longest time, we only had a solar product where you just plug solar power in. We shipped out 20,000 of those and great success. It's going really well. But for the longest time, we've wanted to get this version where you can plug EV chargers into it. And not just EV chargers, also heat pumps, pool pumps, basic heavy load electrification assets where people are going to have to do something in their service panel normally to get it out of their house. So we're launching this the back half of this year. And we already have samples out to a lot of utilities for testing and integration, make sure it works well, really making sure we're dotting the I's and crossing the T's on the product set. But once we get it out there, we are hoping we can do the same thing for EV charging as we do for solar in terms of just destroying the cost to get it out of the houses.
And as I said, there are people that are upset that they bought the electric vehicle because they can only do the level 1 charging.
Yep.
And boom, now they have a solution. Everybody goes level 2 and it works the way they were promised.
Yeah, exactly. One other thing I think is kind of interesting about this, and it's the differentiation between the sort of the solar market and the EV buying market. The solar adopter typically doesn't think about how the wiring gets into their house at all, even after it's done. So, mostly we talk to solar installers about it because they're like, yeah, I need that. Give me that. That's the thing I want. Homeowner's like, okay, sounds good. I save money. Great. But when we talked about this EV solution for the first time last year, we just sort of put a little teaser out there saying, hey, we're developing this thing. The monster response we got from the market, the typical EV owner is so much more passionate about their EV and their EV experience than the typical solar owner is. Solar's like, yeah, I feel good about it. I'm great. I'm saving some money. Awesome. But when you get an EV and you can't charge it, whoa, that is a passionate, passionate audience that is very excited when someone says they have a solution for them.
I myself get that reaction from people. Yeah. Just tell them about your product. Can you talk about your prior background? How did you get to where you are today?
In addition to, that hippy-dippy granola stuff from growing up, I spent a lot of time in Southeast Asia and teaching in Japan before I sort of started on my own, sort of energy journey. And while I was there, you know, I saw, you know, one of the things, hey, I want to do clean development, either sanitation or clean power. Realized that my political philosophy background wasn't going to be a major boon for that. And so ended up going to grad school for energy markets. Spent a number of years working, doing these massive linear optimization models, figuring out what the best buildouts were going to be for the power grid, you know, transmission, you know, dispatch, and really around environmental constraints as well, like, you know, SO2 trading regimes, NOx, things like that. One of the things that occurred to me during that sort of 8-year stint while I was doing that,
Wait, was that 8 years?
Yeah, I spent 8 years, but it wasn't just the same thing every time. I got to do a lot of international work. I took the big model we were using for the United States and was able to build one for Japan, one for Korea, one for Australia. So I learned how those different power markets worked and how they interact with a least cost optimization model. It was actually, if you're an energy nerd like me, it was an amazingly great sort of foundation for understanding really how energy markets work, what's valuable, what's not, and what's needed in the future. So what kind of occurred to me is like, oh, look, under any constraint, any scenario, any set of different laws and rules around the grid, for the next like 20 years, maybe 30 years, we're not going to build anything but natural gas and renewables in the United States. There's not going to be new coal plants. This is back in 2005, roughly. There's not going to be new nuclear plants. It's going to be natural gas and renewables. And the question is, what can we do to make tip that balance toward renewables? And for me, the most interesting place around that was not the big scale, you know, let's go get wind turbines out there, let's get the PPA, let's crank the monkey, do it again. It was the changing vanguard of technology was what's happening at the home, at the grid edge, the megawatt, the, you know, the Amory Levin soft path, the RMI, all that stuff was the most interesting stuff for me. Because in my heart of hearts, I believe that as these electrification technologies emerge, as solar emerges, as EVs emerge, it's going to make the home the natural node for power consumption and generation. I mean, people have been tossing around the term prosumer forever. But we're getting to the point where the prosumer may become sort of the dominant, or at least a dominant force in grid interactions. Because you've got this distributed resource where the power is being consumed where it's being produced. And it's not only for like heating and cooling, it's now for transportation as well with EVs. So everything and all the technologies that are emerging that work together seamlessly there, the only major issue that remains is driving the cost down for those technologies. And if we can make those technologies, you know, drive the cost down, we can make that the simple dominant form of energy in the United States, ideally the world. So we have better resilience, better energy equity, and effectively a continuously reactive grid where we don't have to build more central station power plants. We don't have to run huge transmission corridors across the United States and carve up the country that way. We can keep the majority of the investment in our infrastructure at the home level. That's our goal.
That's very exciting. I still think we're going to need more transmission. I don't know if I agree with you on that.
We're going to need more of everything is the truth. But our mission is to be really focused on the home.
And one of the reasons that we are is because if you have a lot of EVs, you're really upping the loads. If you have the things that you're empowering, that your technology is empowering people to have, then you're going to need more energy. And I think you're going to need to have transmission for it.
Ah, but with solar being as cheap as it is, it's gotten so low cost now, and it's going to keep going down in cost. And the efficiencies will keep going up. The amount of coverage for on a day-to-day basis you put on your roof may be more than enough to cover your new loads and using your EV as a storage point that's on your house. 2 or 3 years from now, that's you're really going to be where the market's going to be at.
Look, I 100% agree with that vision. I really do. But I think there are places in this country and in the world where you don't have that solar. So you need to move it from where you do have solar to get there, or wind.
That is a fair point.
So there are some places, New York City is going to need to get some energy.
Yeah, for sure.
But I'm with you.
Our hope, our goal is to make it as home-centric as we can.
Yeah, and I agree with that vision very much. What are some setbacks you've had in your career?
Too numerous to name, mostly self-inflicted. We've been doing Connector for about 10 years now. The biggest setback, or the types of setbacks, really are the experimentation with product market fit. You know, belief in one thing and then realizing it has to be a different thing. For the longest time, for example, we believed we needed to have a bling bling, smart, AI, data-rich, optimized product because we're sitting in this great location between the grid, the home, and the DER, where we can do this magical processing and great learnings for everybody and optimization for orchestration for DERs. We thought we had to be those guys in order to have a really high value solution. Turns out it's too many oceans to boil simultaneously, especially if you're trying to work with utilities and solar installers and all the people that touch this space. The danger of being at the nexus of and sort of an energy interface is you are at a nexus of energy interface. You're touching everybody. All these stakeholders want to have a say in it. So we realized a few years ago that by focusing so intensely on trying to create all this data optimization and the orchestration stuff, we were really missing the core value, which is just make it cheaper, make it lower cost, drive down the cost that allow people to get solar on their houses, drive down the cost allow to get people EV chargers. We focus on that, which is not easy in and of itself. There's a lot of like secret sauce technology that goes into our product that allows those things to be simple. It took a lot of time to manage heat rise issues and thermal management and the physical form factor. The utilities say, hey, that's great. You guys really cracked the code on this. This works for our utility trucks and it works great for the solar installers. That's what's taken us along. We should have focused on that from the beginning instead of trying to do too many things at once.
Yeah, you tried to boil the ocean, and I think what you're going to find, and I hope what you're going to find, is that you're going to start with an inexpensive solution that does what it really needs to do, but that over time, you can build other products on top of that that are more complex and do more, and you might have that amazing product in the end.
That is the vision. We have to climb the mountain the right way. You can't climb two mountains at once. The takeaway there is doing more to experiment quickly with product market fit without actually building things and going down rat holes that look like they're going to lead something. And it turns out when you hit this unforeseen blocker, that's, oh, wait, there's a market here, but it's going to grind to get to. Don't do that. Try to find ways to get down those rabbit holes without actually building product to get down them.
Can you talk about the success or successes you're most proud of?
At the end of the day, from being nothing but an idea, we've now gone to supporting over 20,000 solar installs in the United States, which is pretty exciting. But even more so, the company and the team at the company, we're about 50 people now at Connector, is pretty uniquely aligned culturally in my experience. And that was very deliberate. We have a very deliberate culture at Connector. We have a strict no a-holes policy, first of all.
And what?
No a-holes. So, I'll do the abbreviation.
And I can't get hired there.
Yeah. No. You fit right in. At the end of the day, it's like there's a culture of intention. And we have these sort of, you know, Nike-style tenets up on the wall where it's like, these are the things that we live by. These are our values. This is our mission. And we reinforce that in everything we do. In our all-hands meetings, in our reviews, in our hiring practices, we really put those front and center. For example, like one of our tenets is find a way or make one. Pretty old school. A lot of people used that before, but it's really about sort of the grit and the grind that everyone is expected to sort of go through in order to get to make us successful. Another one is no BS, just full stop. If you have a question, problem, issue with someone else, you bring it to the fore and you know that they're going to be responsive and respectful and listen to you thoughtfully about what you have to say. You don't have to worry that someone's going to get all bent out of shape because you have a difference of opinion about something.
Teamwork, it's overused, but it is so everything. When I look back at when I was most productive in my life, it wasn't about me. It was about the fact that I had incredible teams with me. I remember those teams to this day. I still talk to people on those teams.
Yep.
Good job.
Yeah, I mean, it's always a work in progress, but being down in the foxhole together for a good long grind does a lot to bring people together.
When you look at the future of climate, 20, 30 years out, what do you think it looks like?
It's the unknown. In some way, shape, or form, yes, there's going to be some serious issues. It will be worse in some ways. We don't really know for sure exactly how worse and what the impacts will be. But I sort of have two sort of competing thoughts in my own head about this. On the one hand, yes, we need to act now, because we don't know what exactly the risk is going to be. So let's get after it. This is our moonshot moment. But at the same time, I don't know, maybe it's because I'm just dumb this way. I have an abiding faith in the human race, despite all evidence to the contrary. And for myself as well, that, we are incredibly good at doing dumb things. I do believe we are also incredibly good at rising to the moment. There has to be a way to get everyone to recognize that this is the moment. We may get to the precipice, we get to the brink, but there are enough people in that 20% out there who are really pulling things forward that we, through policy, through training, through technology, will pull the world back from the brink. I fundamentally believe that.
See, I think it's more than 20%. I'm just going to lay into that a little bit because I think what people can do is vote. And I think from a voting perspective, it's going to take greater than 50% to put the people in place, the 20% or even the 5% that could really make those things happen.
For sure. And absolutely. We need to have the right people in power. We need to have people getting behind this. I don't believe 80% of people should be sitting on their hands.
Yeah.
You know, a good portion of those 80% will vote the right way to help with the people who are going to help put policies in place. I'm just saying there's the 20% of people who are going to motivate those people to vote.
I agree.
It'll be the Martin Luther Kings of the world that we need to get people to do the right thing.
Maybe even 5%.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe 1%. You know, it's yeah.
I agree with you. What's some advice, since you're saying most people have to engage, even though only a few people need to really lead and motivate, what's your advice to the people out there listening to this podcast about what they can do to help?
I think grappling with the climate change is a lot like people grappling with, like, you know, going to the gym and getting healthy. A lot of people will do it sort of in spurts, or they're like, I have to do all or nothing. I'm like, I'm hardcore. I'm going keto. I'm going to hit the gym every day. And they do that for a little bit at the beginning of the year, and then it tapers off and they stop. And they're like, it's either all or nothing. And it doesn't have to be this guilt-racked thing where you have to go vegan, you have to drive an EV, you've got to, like, limit all. You don't have to go completely climate negative. There are small steps. It's okay to wait until your car is at a point. If you can't afford to go out and get an EV right now, when it's time to get a new EV, a car, really look at an EV. In the meantime, maybe drive a little less, combine trips here and there, little things. If everyone did a few little things, that would have a seismic impact. And I think we need to start thinking that way, that it's okay. You can be a climate champion by taking small steps within boundaries, so long as you're mindful about it, rather than trying to be like, I'm going to solve the climate crisis myself, put it on my back and go. No one's going to do that.
I do think it's important for people to try to do things like you're saying, in moderation, what they can actually do. And I guess I'm agreeing with you. That's where it takes the 5 to 20% of people that work out in the gym all the time, their whole life, that always are staying in shape. Those are the people on the climate side that are doing the things to make it easier for everybody else to eat healthy and exercise.
Exactly.
By making that not something that's difficult, making EVs fantastic vehicles.
That's right.
Making a way to connect your EV and charge it that isn't very expensive and that's easy.
Yeah, that's exactly it. These small handful of people who are passionate enough about the subject, most people don't care about how much it costs to connect your EV. I'm sorry to say, I wish it were like a thing, like everyone get behind this. Most people would just like to know, when I do get an EV, it will be very cheap to connect. So they're not going to be working on that, solving that problem. We're working on solving that problem, just like someone else is working on the next generation of solar modules to bring the efficiency up by 3% or what have you. So long as that 20% is out there, just hauling on the machine, so long as everyone else can come in behind it, we're going to be fine.
And I know you, and you're working out 24/7.
Yeah, it does. It surely it shows.
All the time. At least working out the climate muscle. Do you have any questions for me?
We're here at DistribuTech, obviously.
Yeah.
Aside from our spectacularly amazing game-changing technology,
yeah,
is there anything you've heard on the show floor that you're really interested about?
Well, what I do is I advise companies, so it's very hard for me to pull my own opinion about my companies away from this. So I'm going to talk about one of my companies because I'm so excited, and he's had a pretty good DistribuTech, and that is a company called GridWrap.
Okay.
And so he presented, hopefully he'll win the Initiate contest, which is the startups.
Oh, cool.
For people that don't know about it, that's another cool reason to come to DistribuTech to check out the new companies. And he has a composite metal that he uses to patch wooden and concrete poles.
Oh.
And so instead of having to get a helicopter or a big truck in with a brand new pole and take down the line and have an outage, you just patch the problems with the pole. That's really funny. I always thought it was still the wood that was holding up the pole, but it turns out after a few days when this stuff sets, you don't need any pole in there. Like it's 100% this composite material that is the new pole. You're just using the existing pole as a mold.
As well, yeah, no, that's very
pretty
cool.
Incredible.
Yeah, it was interesting. Technologies like that and sort of, you know, like ours, at the end of the day, for many people, it's like, oh, that's not really sexy. It's just like sort of a point solution. But
yeah,
it's a critically valuable thing that solves an incredibly important problem for a person who needs it. I love that.
And he put some fire protection material in there so it doesn't burn.
Nice.
It's pretty cool. Anyway, since you asked.
No, it's all right.
I had to give them a plug.
You're so well sort of distributed through the industry. I'm always interested in hearing what you have to say about who's doing what.
Well, thank you. Is there anything else you want to say, something that I haven't asked about that you want to add?
No, I think we pretty much covered everything. I'm super grateful that you took the time to talk to us today. It's always great, you know, working with you and being your friend. And I'm looking forward to like doing some really cool things together next few months and a few years.
Yeah, me too. With that, I'm going to wrap this up. I'm going to wrap it up with a wrap.
Oh, here we
you
go.
Were just a kid and you thought I was dumb. Who's going to swim in a pond with scum? You were installing your battery solution, but it was oh so tiring. And it was amazing that half the cost or more was from the wiring. I want to thank Connector and I want to thank you. Now, lots of people can charge at not level one, but go to level two. You want to do a career change. You wanted to change gears. So you went and got your master's over 8 years and you have some advice. If you want to reach your company goal, it's really important not to go down a technical rabbit hole. When it comes to culture, you want to be like Nike. You want to be extreme. So you want no a-holes, no BS, and have an incredible team. Listen, I'm glad you could sit for a bit. And when you can't get your EV charger or solar on your panel to fit, I think everybody should go out and get. I know that the product's gonna be a hit. Thank you so much, my good friend, Whit.
Thanks, Lee. You can cut the rest of the interview, just keep that, because that's the TLDR. That's the executive summary.
I love Whit's focus on team. My mentor in the 90s, Les Ferris, told a story of a team offsite where leadership was asked to find shared goals. They couldn't do it. Les had to end the meeting very early. The next year, the leader of the group insisted they try again. To kick off the meeting, the GM let the team know that their division was being sold. He added the belief that they could buy the division themselves. With this very urgent and critical threat and opportunity in front of them, they filled the whiteboards with shared goals. Creating a team is not always that easy. Just a reminder to catch the video version of this podcast. It's on YouTube on the Climate Champions channel. If you have comments or questions about the podcast, visit my website at privatenergyinnovations.com and drop me an email. I would love to hear from you. And if you're enjoying the Climate Champions podcast series, please subscribe, rate it 5 stars if you're an Apple user, and tell your climate-concerned friends about it. You can hear the emotion in Whit's voice. The Connector product crushes current costs of connecting solar and EV chargers. For many, it will be the difference of purchasing solar or an EV or not, enabling hundreds of thousands of people to help mitigate climate change.